Welcome to the Munichheim Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks the opener is whoever is serving him canned food in the morning. That's Lenny. I'm Munichheim, and I am so glad we are on video now because you can see how funny my jokes are, how much Dominique Foxworth laughs in response to them. Dominique, welcome to the inaugural bi-weekly Tuesday edition featuring you and me and Lenny of the Munichheim Show.
That's great.
Featuring Lenny.
So we're gonna need more Lenny in this show now that we're on video.
Yeah.
And also, you feed Lenny canned dog food? I feel like you would never feed Lenny canned dog food.
Canned dog food is good dog food. If sponsors.
I assumed that when I had a dog, he died a few years ago. I bought him, like, I mean, I got duped and I got like some fancy, like fresh meat delivered to my house every day. I figured you were dumb enough to get duped like me too, but I guess not.
Lenny's 18 pounds, you know, he doesn't need like a T-bone steak every morning.
I had an English bulldog named Cash. He would tear that food up. He was a sweet dog. R.I.P. Cash.
So this is a little bit unusual because normally I'm doing a lot of housekeeping right now and kind of tell people what this is going to be like all season long. By the way, bi-weekly can either mean twice a week or every other week. Isn't that weird? When I double-checked it because I was like, it's the bi-weekly episode, right? And anyway, it's very strange and confusing, and someone in charge of the English language should get on top of that. Normally, we will be reacting to things, obviously. You know, Monday Night Football, we're going to talk like winners, losers. Obviously, there's nothing to react to now. So on today's show, we're going to preview the Thursday night game, the aforementioned opener, which I am extremely excited about. But before we get to that, I asked you just ahead of this weekend, ahead of the season, to pick an offense and defense that you're most intrigued by. Not the one you think is going to be the best, not the one you're predicting go to the Super Bowl or whatever, just the one you like really, we've been talking about all offseason, you really just want to see on the field after all of this offseason talk. So naturally, you sent me four instead of two, which is just really setting a tone because I am also, and this is one last bit of housekeeping, really striving to keep this show from going as long as some of my offseason programs have gone.
Sorry, we will stick close to the clock. I will shorten both of my topics. So you want to know who first or do you want to go first?
Why don't you go first? Hit me with the offenses or offense, up to you, that you really
Miami
just want to
see. San Francisco. Miami and San Francisco. So,
which is interesting because there's obviously a lot of shared DNA there. So let's start with Miami because that was actually my second choice when I was trying to pick what offense I wanted to see. And it's my second choice, or it's one that I'm particularly intrigued by because I think there's this assumption that Mike McDaniel, having been the run game coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers, we know what that offense looked like with him and Jimmy Garoppolo for the last few years, that he's just going to port it to Miami. But Dominique, the skill players, the personnel, everything in Miami is very different. So I don't quite know how it's all going to shake out.
Yeah, I mean, I think the base principle of the Shanahan scheme, which goes all the way back to Mike, whom I played for, and we would practice against those offenses all the time. The base principle is zone running with play action off of it. And you put particular players in binds. You pick out players and you attack those players in the running game. And then you attack those same players, be it a linebacker or a safety or rarely a corner. They would do receivers over sometime and against zone that would force the corner that have to be responsible for that backside tight end. And they would play action off of that or run and do a zone cutback and force that person to make a tackle. It's a long-winded answer to say that the Shanahan scheme is fundamentally based on zone blocking scheme. They've evolved some more running attacks out of it, but right, that is the core of it, and that goes everywhere well. The reason why I'm interested in it is the biggest problem with the offense last year was not the quarterback. And I know we're going to focus on Tua, and it matters. The biggest problem with the offense last year was the offensive line. And the zone blocking scheme with play action, presumably, because they have not fixed the offensive line with personnel, but you can make their job easier, which, like, no, there are very few rosters, which I guess we'll get to later some rosters that are closer to perfection, but there are no rosters that are perfect. Generally, what a good coach is going to do is try to protect the weaknesses on his roster in some way. And this is the exciting part of this team, is that this blocking scheme, if they're able to effectively zone block, because back when I was playing and before I was playing, those Broncos offensive lines were small and athletic. You could not, if you wanted, at the time, Jake Plummer was the quarterback. If you wanted Jake Plummer to just drop back and sit in the pocket, that wasn't going to work out because we just weren't built for that. And so it takes a lot of pressure off. It makes their job easier if you play action. You don't have to step back and protect them. And if you're zone blocking, you don't always have to make your block the exact right way. Because the point of zone blocking scheme is they open every gap is a possible gap for the running back to run through. They're just waiting for you to overrun your gap or miss your gap somehow and make a big play out of it, which is why they have incredibly explosive, fast running backs.
I think we're not talking about the Patriots, but I'm definitely going to talk about them on episode later this week with, spoiler alert, Bill Simmons as a guest. And, you know, I'm sure you're fully aware that they've had a lot of trouble adjusting or evolving to a more zone-based run scheme, which I think sometimes when we think about zone scheme, you talked about how it can protect your offensive linemen, but your offensive linemen also have to be capable of executing it, and there's a certain stylistic attribute, which is what partially what made the Patriots thing so confusing, because those are not... I mean, they drafted a lineman who I think makes sense for that. But, you know, when I look at Miami, like, it makes sense in some ways, I think, that it would help, but I talked about this a little bit with Aaron Schatz. Watching them in the preseason, granted without Teron Armstead, but all the other starters, they're still so bad, that offensive line. Yeah. And the question I brought up to him is, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, if they can't effectively run the football, does that hurt all of the other aspects of this offense that are not predicated? We know you don't have to have an effective run game to execute play action, to execute RPOs, but defenses have to believe you're willing to do it. And I think that is something I want to see play out. The other thing, Dominic, at the very beginning, I said the personnel is so different from San Francisco. That's the other thing I'm kind of curious about. There's, like, Mike Gesicki doesn't block. We know that. You know, there's no Debo Samuel on this team, but they have incredible speed and all these other, the skill players are so different that I almost wonder, okay, like, it's not going to be one for one. How do you use them in this scheme?
They're not different worse. They're just different. And that's what, that's what I think that's an important distinction to make, is like, I'm not discouraged about the skill players at all. And I think Tyreek Hill is a close approximation of Debo Samuel, and better in many ways. So, like, the matchup problems that Debo Samuels creates is when you put him in the game, if he's outside, you have to guard him with a corner. If he's in the backfield, then you might want to be in base to protect against the run. So, like, essentially, they can put him out there and have multiple personnel groupings, in which case, if you go out there in base, then they'll spread you out and attack you that way. If you go the other way, then they'll make your nickel fit like a strong side linebacker. And that's hard to do. I don't think that the Dolphins have any players like that. But if you're thinking about jet sweeps, screens, Tyreek Hill, and I mean Jaylen Waddle to some degree, but not as prolific in NFL as Tyreek Hill yet. Tyreek Hill is that dude. You can jet sweep Tyreek Hill. You can throw him a 5-yard out. You can throw him, and that takes a lot of pressure off of the quarterback and the pressure off of the offensive line. So that could help.
Agree.
The Gesicki point, I don't know how Gesicki fits into this, because if you can't block, if you can't run block effectively as a tight end in these schemes, I'm not sure how they use you.
Yeah, I mean, he's almost kind of like what our friend Nate Tice calls just like a power slot, is I think his terminology. Yeah. I mean, he's just like a gigantic slot receiver. But, you know, Tyreek Hill, like, instead of that sort of, the run game's not going to look the same, but what does Tua Tagovailoa love to do? Throw RPOs. Tyreek Hill is going to turn some of those RPOs into huge game. An RPO game that was already incredibly effective last year, despite having no run game as the R, just the PO. I think if I'm a defensive playing this team, I've just got light bodies on the field as much as possible, and I'm just daring them to run the football, and and I'm curious
which
to see
could
how it
goes. Turn, yeah, which could turn their offensive line into a dominant force if they are going up against nickelbacks. So I think that's the question. And most of the league defensively, a lot of the league at least, is shifting more to too high, protect against big plays. Again, that should make it easier for them to run the ball, which is the foundation of these Shanahan derivatives.
So that's a good transition for the unit that I'm excited to watch, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs offense. Obviously, an offense that faced that exact look more, probably more than any other team than the NFL last year, although by the end, all the high-powered passing attacks were facing that, the Rams, the Bengals, whatever, and started to evolve in response to that last year. You did see them, you know, working that underneath game a bit more. They used more play action than they did, which is, by the way, something I want to put a pin in that, because I know you have written about Patrick Mahomes weirdly not being as effective in play action. I have some kind of theories about that, but the reason I'm interested in watching them is not just because of that continued evolution, but because you talked about the receiver in Miami. Well, he's no longer in Kansas City, and instead, though, there's not like a gaping hole. They filled it with a lot of other very different types of wide receivers, bigger bodies, guys who can block. You know, in the preseason, there was a lot of people took note of the fact that during the series where Patrick Mahomes played and looked freaking awesome, by the way, they had heavier personnel groupings on the field. They were using their tight ends, the fullback morphs, and then they've got a few running backs in the mix now. So I guess I just want to see, okay, is that something they're going to commit to at the beginning of the season? And if they do it, can they successfully drive teams out of those too high looks so that, you know, through this more balanced offensive approach, they can bring back the vertical game?
Yeah, I mean, I believe they can. So the ways that they try to replace Tyreek Hill is clear that they aren't trying to replace Tyreek Hill. I mean, which maybe is smart, or not maybe smart, it's smart because you can't. Like, they don't make a lot of them people who have world-class straight-line speed and change directions like Barry Sanders almost. Like, that is a tough combination and also accelerates quickly. A lot of people can change directions, but then they're running a 4.6 out of it. It feels like he's running a 4.2 out of his cut immediately. And that's what makes him impossible to guard and difficult to tackle and requires you to play too high safety. So I don't know that there's any receiver on this team right now that requires you to play that way. Patrick Mahomes, his improvisation skills may have offensive or defensive coordinators want two safeties that at least start high so they can recover for it. But I do think that this team may not be as explosive, but could be as effective out of this, out of these attacks, because Mahomes is still going to pass. Andy Reid, we all know, he wants to throw the ball. And if you force bigger bodies onto the field that are less comfortable with dealing with scramble drill situations, and less comfortable dealing with Patrick Mahomes putting a dot right over your shoulder as cornerbacks would be or other safeties would be, I think that could create a problem for them. And with Juju in the slot, he's as good a blocking receiver as there is. If they do commit to the run, which is not an Andy Reid type of thing to do, they should be able to do that.
What a waste of an offensive line if they don't, though. I've just spun all the way around on this. I have completely rebuked my pocket-protecting pass because I really was screaming at Patrick Mahomes to give the ball at the end of last season. And I will say, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire faced the most light boxes in football, unsurprisingly, last year. Didn't make the most out of them. So, you know, they have that rookie, Isaiah Pacheco, I believe I'm saying his name right, bring in Ronald Jones. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of them is better suited to more of, I mean, it's a pretty diverse run game, but it's just right there. It's not like, when I say it's right there, I'm talking like 5 yards a pop. Are right there. Like, this is, it should be so easy for them. And I think last year, though, like, a lot of it was just, it wasn't even, they would put together drives where they would do that and then would kind of inexplicably go away from it. Or Patrick Mahomes would get frustrated and, you know, try to make things happen downfield or take super sacks or whatever. And I think it's just like, if you just go into this season all the way committed to it, it should be really mm-hmm. dangerous.
What's your theory for why? Because I don't remember what I was doing, but I discovered a long time ago that Patrick Mahomes was not good at play action. And then I was like, this is probably just an aberration. So I looked at previous seasons and I went all the way back to college. And he's always been worse at play action than he is not play action, which is shocking. I'm sure people who listen to this podcast know that everybody is better. Every quarterback you've ever met or seen in your life is better at play action than not. Patrick Mahomes is like not bad at play action, but he's the only one who's like worse at play action. And I mean, turn your back to the defense type of thing. That stuff is, but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I was going to say maybe, but he's so good at improvising after his first or second option is taken away that it's weird to think mm-hmm. that like turning his back to defense, even if defenses were to try to, you know, even he was kind of confused by what he was seeing, that he wouldn't be able to make magic happen the way he normally is. The fact that you said he dates back to college kind of throws a wrench into my theory, because I was thinking...
But I mean, not necessarily.
Well, I was thinking it might just be, you know, the way defenses have played the Chiefs through the... Like, granted, it got extreme last year, but they're always facing, you know, more sub-packages than any team in the NFL, and I did wonder... I was thinking maybe, all right, you know, some of those throwing lanes that are available to other quarterbacks coming off of play action might not be there. Just there might just be more bodies in that part of the field, especially since it seems like with play action, if you're trying to take shot plays downfield, which the Chiefs would be, you know, would have been, it might have just had to do with the looks that they're getting. But it goes back to what we were saying about the Dolphins, though, like this constant, like, okay, studies show that success in play action is not predicated on having an effective run game. However, every single defensive player in the NFL will tell you it is. And there's like something in between that I still don't really know. They have to believe it, obviously.
My best theory for Patrick Mahomes is the coaches that he played for are not play action coaches, right? Because even back to college is Texas Tech, right? Like it's the spread it out and air it out with Kingsbury. And it's not, I mean, that's my best argument.
The Vic here in Philadelphia, didn't he use a fair amount of play action with Andy Reid?
That's fair.
But I don't know, man.
That's fair.
All right.
Now, you're probably right.
Defense.
So there's not enough time for my San Francisco. That's fine.
It's already been an unforgettable football season, so don't miss the action and score the hottest deals on tickets with Vivid Seats. Slap on the face paint and hit the stadium. Enjoy unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and exclusive birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, we're excited to offer you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code MENA20. That's code MENA20. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. At 5-Hour Energy, they stan the fan. From the new-to-football fans to the born-for-the-love-of-the-game lifers, they know fandom isn't just a hobby, it's a way of life. We're talking about the fans who are born to fan. In fact, 79% of professional football fans have been fans of their favorite team since they were born. Enter the superfans, the unofficial captains of the fan base, known for outlandish antics, hearts of gold, and passion on top of passion. They're leading the charge for their teams and for their cities. It's about their deep love for the community. It's about pride in their colors. It's about rooting for their team no matter what. No matter what team you root for, 5-Hour Energy knows being a fan requires heart, soul, and a whole lot of energy. That's why they've created a limited edition Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy to keep you fueled throughout the season. Available on 5hourenergy.com, shipped nationwide. That's the number 5hourenergy.com.
A defense. You can choose San Francisco. That'd be a really boring choice.
Yeah, I don't want to talk San Francisco for defense. I like the Ravens as the most interesting, or Philadelphia. I think the Ravens might actually be more interesting than Philadelphia. Philadelphia, I just want to see all these people on the field all the time doing everything. It's going to be great. But for the Ravens, it's life after Wink, where I caught myself once saying that Wink Martindale's scheme is a certain thing, then I realized that it doesn't feel fair to call it a scheme because it's just blitzed the shit out of people, no matter what.
Did you watch the Giants in the preseason at all?
Yeah. So. Yeah, and then they're going to be in a tough spot because they don't have the corners.
They're going to look like the Ravens did at the end of last season when he was still blitzing. With all the injuries.
That is Wink's answer to everything. But anyway, he's gone now, so I assume that they're going to be a little bit more conservative. So it'll be nice to see, or be interesting to see, what this defense turns into, because they still got bodies. They got players. We'll see if this makes them better or not better. But being healthy will help them a lot.
I think it's so the new defensive coordinator, Mike McDonald, comes from Michigan. Mm-hmm. Different style from Martindale. I think from what people I know who watch a lot of Michigan football tell me, you're going to see a lot more quarters, maybe cover seven, simulated pressures. But what I find interesting about it is the way this defense is built. It should be an exceptional secondary, right?
Yeah.
The defensive tackles are very strong, and Travis Jones, they drafted this year, looks really good too. They do not have edge rushers. They got Adafe Owe, who might take a leap. Justin Houston, who, age guess, 36?
Yeah.
That's just off the top of my head. Could be totally wrong.
That's not explosive age
nothing
anymore.
Behind them. So, you know, it's an interesting challenge, right, Dominique? Because, I mean, you're like, that's exactly the right way to build a defense. You focus on secondary. But, you know, but it is.
Wouldn't the numbers suggest that that's right?
The numbers say that coverage is more consistent year to year than pass rush, for sure. But it does, you're going to have to figure out a way to get pressure with this group.
Yeah, I mean, adding Kyle Hamilton is another dynamic. He's the enormous athletic safety from Notre Dame that they drafted. Adding him to this mix is going to be interesting, figuring out how to... I mean, he's one of those tweener guys where I think a lot of the NFL is headed to positionlessness, at least in the back end. But this is a team that Wink Martindale would really like to coach and that would perform well under Wink Martindale, because they got a lot of people who can cover healthy now, and they do not have rush ends. So you want to blitz out of that. So we'll see how much they're going to change their strategy. I don't know. Quarters can turn into man for a number of different reasons. So it's not that much of a stretch to play quarters with man coverage guys. But if you have guys that can hold up in man coverage all game, there is really no reason not to stick them in it and deal with the consequences and give the quarterback hell. So, like, why build a team like this if you're not going to do that?
Right.
It seems like you should put your money elsewhere. So
right. Yeah. Well, and then they've got that.
Or your capital in general.
No. You're like that. This is the strength of your defense. Lean on them, you know. And to that end, right. Kyle Hamilton is the third safety on this team. Blitz him, man. I saw him do it in college. He is a speeding bullet.
He's great at it.
So I would love that as a changeup. Because I think, you know, the key with him is he had a bit of an up and down summer. I'm sure you saw some of the kind of low lights at times. And I think, you know, he was asked to just play safety. And I think when he is in a better position where he is that third safety and can kind of be eased more into the coverage side of things, you can use him situationally like that in some really creative and interesting ways. This should be a top 10 group. Should be. Absolutely. But...
Yeah.
If one of those edge rushers goes down, it is.
I mean, if the edge rushers don't go down, it's still, they aren't like great edge rushers. But I think you and I have talked about this before. In general, you want to have something that you can lean on. Like, that's how you're going to be good. If it's a play offensively that you're really good at, if it's like we talk about the zone rushing attack, you like want to have something that you can do that you can then build other like wrinkles off of, or a group that you can put pressure on, particularly on defense. And the group that most offenses want to attack is the secondary. they have the good fortune of having a secondary that they also want you to attack. So, like, they are built to really put the pressure on them and to attack. So, I don't know what will happen with them. I think that those old habits die a little slowly, so they might still be an aggressive defense, which is probably for the best.
Good news for them is they've got Joe Flacco week one. Or maybe Zach Wilson. I saw he's like practicing. Famous last words. Watch Joe Flacco.
Revenge game.
Light it up. All right. I've got kind of a weird one on defense. Not a weird one, but it's a group that I don't expect to be a top 10 unit, but I'm very curious to see what they look like on the field, and that's the Raiders. Right. This is purely schematic. because...
When I saw that, I knew exactly why. But anyway,
okay, so... For those who missed last season, quick recap. With Gus Bradley as defensive coordinator, the Raiders were a statistical aberration in every sense. The remaining holdout of the Pete Carroll cover three era played more cover three than any defense in the NFL by a significant margin, blitzed less than any defense in the NFL. Gus Bradley is gone. In comes Patrick Graham in a lateral move from New York, who's been seen as kind of a head coach. He has been seen as a head coach candidate and is going to do something different, undoubtedly. I was thinking back to, okay, well, what have we seen from Graham so far, whether it was New England or the Giants? And the truth is, like, Dominique, and I was just thinking back to, you know, his first year in New York, I was really impressed by him and some of the adjustments he made with a fairly lackluster group of players. You know, what he was able to get out of Leonard Williams, for example, or, you know, some of the DBs that year. And then last year, really the talent, I think, hit, and he was kind of like just trying to survive out there, trying to do whatever they could just to, you know, gin up something of a pass rush or whatever. But he comes to Vegas, and they actually have a lot more talent than he's had to work with thus far in his career. You have Max Crosby, Chandler Jones. Yes. You know, Chandler Jones isn't peak Chandler Jones, but that is a very good pair of edge rushers. And then
didn't Chandler Jones had like 5 sacks in week one last year, or was that 2 years
ago? Yeah, no, it was last year against Tennessee. And then he had like less than that the rest of the season. It's one of those things where you got to dig into the stats. And then this secondary, so they trade, I actually really liked this trade after bringing in Chandler Jones, Yannick Ngakoue for Rakia Sin, rare player. What Rakia Sin can do that the previous administration did not do is play man coverage. And then you've got Nate Hobbs, who was in the slot last year, was good, he's going to be playing outside, I believe. You have Trevon Merrig, who is a good free safety. And then you have Jonathan Abram, who really can only play box safety. So it presents a unique challenge, which is, okay, we don't want to, you know, I'm sure it's not going to be just that same simplistic cover three, but there are some personnel limitations still. And the reason I'm interested in it is this is a defensive coordinator who has had success working with those kinds of limitations in the past.
Yeah, Jonathan Abram, the box safety is also the covered safety. I actually, as surprising as this may be to you, had started a few games at strong safety in Denver. And it worked in part because I was fine in coverage. And Jonathan, not nearly as physical in the run game, obviously, but you take what you can. Jonathan Abram is the opposite, which I think in the modern NFL is painful.
It's tough
for you to deal with. Is like, particularly when you can't win in this league if you only play zone. You're going to have to play man at some point. These quarterbacks are too good. These offenses are too good. And, I mean, cover four, like I mentioned, can turn into a little bit tighter man-like coverage. But cover three, it can't. And so they're going to have to figure out a way to play some cover four, play some man, and be able to mix it up. And if you have a guy in the middle of your formation and Jonathan Abram that is going to be attacked, like, I don't know where they're going to put him. They better get some pressure because the tight ends that he's going to have to deal with, the potential slot receivers that he's going to have to deal with, it's going to be a challenge. So I don't know if they blitz him a bunch, how they figure it out. So I agree with you. This is an interesting group that could be in for some growing pains, particularly in that group of death that they have over there in the AFC.
Well, and so that's the other, I think, piece of this. the one lesson you should have as a Raiders fan from last season is you cannot play cover three against Patrick Mahomes. Sweet Jesus, never again. And this is a division where you are going to have to play too high. That is what they're, you know, you're if you, especially, well, they should be able to get some different looks with the players that they have up front, but you're going to have to try to force teams to run the ball, keep things in front of you. And I think it's just an interesting logistical challenge. Like, I wouldn't be surprised, Dominique, if so, Daron Harmon from the Patriots is the third safety. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if he's on the field more and you've got Jonathan Abram, like you said, using him more as a blitzer or kind of like as a linebacker. Yeah, because it just doesn't make sense. It's a position they probably should have, I mean, I don't know if they really could have upgraded, but it's a tough one. And I think
that makes...
Yeah. Well, just say this division, it's like we're trying to pick like who's going to come out of it, who can survive it, and as good as I think this offense is going to be, if they can't figure this out, it won't matter.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best answer is to put him in more as a linebacker, and I think he is probably physical enough to like play that sort of situation. But the tough thing is when you put a safety in at linebacker, like I think Kyle Hamilton, the guy we just talked about, is someone who you could do that with. The benefit of that is that you have a safety in there for passing situations. I'm not sure that they get better in passing situations with Jonathan Abram at the linebacker. So I would assume that he is worse against the run than a running back. So it's a tough spot to be in. It's, there is no right answer. And as good as Rakusen is, I don't think that he is enough to cover up for like the rest of their issues. Because we're focusing on Abram, which is not fair. They got coverage holes elsewhere.
They do.
So I'm sorry, Jonathan. You ain't the only problem.
They got to get home. That's really where, you know, they got to get home.
Max, two X's.
He's got to add a third X this season. All right. Well, we got to get home, too, at some point. So I'm going to take a quick break.
Oh, segue.
And then we'll come back.
This holiday season, don't forget your number one fan, you. So what's a gift you could use? Maybe go to more home games or even travel to some away games while rocking a new away team jersey. Well, we've got something for you. Discover automatically doubles all the cash back you've earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. With Discover, you could turn $150 cash back to $300. That'll help with that swanky away jersey. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. What does it feel like to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with AT&T Next Up Anytime? It's like when you first pick up those tongs and now you're the one running the grill. It's indescribable, like something you've never felt before. All the mouth-watering anticipation of new possibilities, whether that's making a perfect cheeseburger or treating your family to a grilled baked potato, which you know will forever change the way they look at potatoes. With AT&T Next Up Anytime, you can feel this way again and again. Learn how to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence on us and the latest iPhone every year with AT&T Next Up Anytime. AT&T, connecting changes everything. Apple Intelligence coming fall 2024 with Siri and device language set to U.S. English. Some features and languages will be coming over the next year. $0 offer may not be available on future iPhones. Next Up Anytime feature may be discontinued at any time, subject to change. Additional fees, terms, and restrictions apply. See att.com/iPhone for details.
All right, Dominique. Bills. Rams. Let's start treetops. Bills are favored. Last I saw it was like 2.5 or something. Does that surprise you at all, or do you think that's appropriate?
No, I think that's right. I think the Bills haven't gotten any worse. Maybe they've gotten better than they were talent-wise last year. I guess losing their offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, who's now the head coach of the Giants, is the biggest question mark with Ken Dorsey stepping in to take over. But with the quarterback with experience that Josh Allen has, I'm not as concerned about that. There are much bigger questions for me on the Rams side. So I think the Bills should be the favorite. I mean, they're,
doing
new things.
Let's start there. What's your biggest question about the Rams?
Well, I mean, the health of their quarterback is the number one question. Is Matthew Stafford hasn't thrown the ball this preseason very much in practice because he got a bad elbow. He also has like a career that has been up and down. Last year was up. Well, last year was up, but you could pick out some plays that had they gone differently, like the interception he tried to throw in the NFC Championship game, that we would consider it a down year. They don't have the complement to Cooper Kupp that they had at many times through last season. We'll see what Robinson does. Like, he's talented, but it's not the same situation. They're without Von Miller, who I know is not Von Miller of his prime, but a pass rusher nonetheless. So this team has holes to fill and potentially some hangover potential.
The cap is real. Well, let's start with Stafford and that offense, because, you know, all the language coming out, well, not initially, when I think everyone got freaked out when Sean McVay said baseball type injury, which are words you never want to hear talking about a quarterback. But since then, they've said he's fine. He's fine. He's certainly fine for this game. Obviously, it's week one. But I think what I'm curious about is last year, so much the offense depended on Matt Stafford to basically throw them out of trouble. They did not have an effective and consistent running game. The offense looked very different from the Sean McVay offenses of old, right? You know, more empty, more dropback, all of that. But what that means is, you know, they were counting on their offensive line to protect Stafford, which, by the way, the offensive line was spectacular last year. And then they were counting on Matthew Stafford to make crazy throws. And, you know, the, obviously the wide receivers are terrific as well. And I think that's where I get a little bit worried, is if that's the same formula this year, there's the injury, which is, I don't want Matthew Stafford throwing a million times, you know, a game or whatever. And I also don't want an offensive line with two new starters being leaned on super heavily at the jump. Joe Noteboom at left tackle is experienced. He is good. They paid him. But he's not Andrew Whitworth, man. Like, it's, I don't know if people quite appreciate how good this line was last year. Top three in both pass and run block win rate. I think, actually, I just said that without even...
Sounds good. Run with it.
Feels right. Okay, no. First in pass block, 12th in run block. Well, you know, I did talk about the run game. But and I think, you know, that's, it's going to be very challenging going up against a Bills pass rush that, you know, adds Von Miller to a group that was already really, really good. They didn't bring down quarterbacks at a high rate, but they have many good young players who will now benefit from the presence of Von Miller. I thought Ed Oliver was really good at the end of the season. They bring in Tim Settle, Daquan Jones. The hope I would have for the Rams, if I was a member of the Ramley, is that the line can hold up long enough for them to attack the cornerbacks, because Dominique, that is a problem in Buffalo.
That is the question in Buffalo. They do not have Trey, who is still recovering from the injury, Tre'Davious White.
I like how you just called him Trey, like he's your friend.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cornerback thing. We can.
Okay.
I mean, you know how you and D tackles do. It's just, we are already
Daquan,
acquainted. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the weakness of this team, that they can potentially attack. This is another team that I think would love to stay in a softer cover three all game and try to take the pressure off of their cornerbacks. If they can get pressure, that works. We're talking about the Bills now. If they can get pressure, that will work. That'll be just fine. But attacking on the outside with a bad elbow, I guess this is not an injury that it feels to me like it's an injury that could get worse as the season goes along, and it may not be bad off the top, but you're asking Stafford to attack the widest parts of the field.
Yeah.
Which is generally how defenses think, is you want to win from the inside out. Things get harder as you get to the edge. You want to take away the inside gaps and bounce the runs to the outside and give your defenders chances to run. You want to take away the short, easy throws and make them throw the longest, most difficult throws, which Matt Stafford has always had the arm strength to do that. But if that's going to be compromised, and if you're going to ask him to do that all game, it's going to be tough. And the losing Whitworth Yeah, that's a guy that feels like you can't replace. And particularly when you live by the F them picks motto, is you're going to have to part ways with players. Because picks aren't just about drafting new players that are good. It's about drafting new players that are good that are also under market. You're not getting very many people under market when you don't have very many young free players, which is what is, or not free, young and cheap players, which is why their defense is morphing into a few big names and other guys. And we'll see, because the offense can normally decide who to attack, and they're not going to attack Ramsey. They're not going to attack Wagner. They're not going to attack Aaron Donald. But I mean, outside of Leonard Floyd, I guess Troy Hill also is a pretty good, and Taylor Rapp. Okay, defense is better than I thought. But anyway,
let's get to that, because there are certainly holes. But I will say one more thing on the Rams offense. I am very excited to see what Allen Robinson looks like, because he's coming off of, you know, his worst year, and all summer long, it's been just sunshine and daisies out of Rams camp. This guy, holy smokes, he can do it all. And he brings an element to this offense that has been missing, right? I mean, he's a true X, a big contested catch guy. I think I've mentioned this a bunch, but this is an offense that for all of their success last season was not efficient in the red zone. Allen Robinson could hypothetically solve that problem in the red zone for them, you know? And I think, again, like when you're going up against a Bills secondary that has one of the best, if not the best safety duos in the league, but is extremely weak at linebacker. Well, they have Taron Johnson, who's good in the slot, but on the outside, a guy like Allen Robinson could be the difference in this game for Los Angeles. He's going to have to be, actually. Let me rephrase that. Probably, right? Because that is the... You talk about hunting weaknesses. That is the glaring weakness right now. I mean, Kyrie Elam looked okay in the preseason. I saw, you know, there were some reps where I thought he looked pretty sticky and physical like he did in college, but he's a rookie. And he, you know, Matthew Stafford to Allen Robinson versus, like, that's daunting. So it's just all about time. They just need to buy time for Stafford to go hunting.
I mean, they aren't going to be bad unless Stafford's elbow is really messed up. But if we're talking about taking down the Bills in week one, who, like, whatever psychic value is attached to, like, being on some sort of, like, make things right revenge tour that the Bills should feel like they're on, because they certainly could have won the Super Bowl last year, and the Rams are on the opposite type of tour, is like, if you can attribute any psychic value to that, that mental edge is definitely on the Bills' side, that we got something to prove, as opposed to this team is like, we proved it.
We're good, yeah. Well, all right, you talked about some of the holes that the Rams have on defense. I think the two biggest ones being edge rusher. Although the pass rush was actually pretty good before they traded for Von Miller, but you are counting on Justin Hollins, fifth round, opposite Leonard Floyd, right. Either Justin Hollins or Terrell Lewis, some combination of them, who are fairly unproven, had a couple of sacks last year. And then corner, and I think that would be my biggest concern, actually, perhaps more than... with Aaron Donald on the defensive line, you're just like, somebody, you know. Yes. It's like being on a podcast with Dominique Foxworth, you know, you just kind of... But corner, though... it's just double Lenny, okay. But corner, though... That's a problem because you mentioned Troy Hill. He was good in Los Angeles. He was not good last year, man. And then David Long Jr., he was benched last year. Like, they didn't, you know, I mean, he's the third round draft pick. And as much as Jalen Ramsey, the way they use him can really, you know, it's very like they can use it to sort of dictate what they see on offense in some ways.
In Cleveland, Troy Hill was good. And I mean, I guess I give some latitude to corners because I'm a biased person. And if you've shown the ability to do it, I do not assume that you can do it all the time, but I assume that it's in there. And I guess that's where the confidence comes, or why I named him as somebody that you could have some faith and trust in. But you're right. He wasn't. I was surprised when they picked him up last year. Just because, like, I thought he was good. Like, you don't let good players leave. And he was not himself, or he was not very good last year. But I still have hope. What's that?
Oh, no, yeah. No, you still have hope? Sorry.
No, I mean, I have hope that he can be effective.
So
I can't say that about Long. And if Aaron Donald's not getting in the backfield, there is nobody who is safe out there on the edge, including Jalen Ramsey. So they're going to move him around and find ways for him to impact the game, which is a nice thing to do for a dynamic player like him, who's a corner who you could, in the olden days, you could take a corner out of the game just by not throwing to him. And that neutralizes that best player. But now they'll put Ramsey in the slot, put him at safety, put him wherever they need to put him so he can have an impact on the game. So we'll figure out if Bobby Wagner's addition makes a big deal. I think that's going to help a lot against San Francisco.
Yes.
He's one of the few linebackers who does not get duped by play action all that often. So that's been a hurdle that they have not been able to clear, even though they won the Super Bowl. They really don't got nothing for Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers. So we'll see how it all pans out. But this team is much holier, I think, than the Bills.
Holier in the bad sense, not in the sacred sense.
I don't know about their prayers or whatever.
Well, they want Super Bowl, so the guy is smiling on them. But I think just having been around them a little bit, you know, they do want Bobby Wagner and Ernest Jones on the field together a lot. They think now it's a strength of the team. And you remember they were blitzing Jones a lot at the end last year with great success. However, this isn't the game. Like, this is the game where you want DBs on the field. They're, you know, this is a team that played a ton of dime last year, third most in the NFL. I think you're going to see a lot of dime in this particular game. I think it's kind of goes back to the Chiefs combo. They're going to dare Buffalo to run. Because, you know, you talk about Jalen Ramsey and his deployment. It's not just Stephon Diggs out there. Gabe Davis is a nightmare. Little bit of recency bias at play, but holy smokes, that recency bias. And I just think, you know, if you're the Rams and you're kind of picking your poison, and this is a team that did play a ton of zone last year and is perfectly content to do that and just occasionally throw in a five-man pressure, I think you're going to sit back and try to make Josh Allen work underneath and hope he makes mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, didn't the Bills, I don't know if they were number one in the league, but they probably had to be in like 10 personnel. So they are going to force at least one of those linebackers to the bench at some point if they continue to live that way. Because as good as Bobby Wagner is, you don't want him lined up against a slot receiver. That's just not a good matchup.
That's what's interesting, though, right? You kind of, I don't want to say you can copy paste what I said about the Chiefs, because it's not the same. They still have very good wide receivers, but I do think this is a Bills team that last year at the end of the season we did see with Brian Daboll start running the football a little bit more, using the tight end a bit more, and I would be curious to see if that continues. You know, they drafted that running back out of Georgia. I want to see if he's on the field a lot. If the Rams do, as we've been discussing, kind of sit back, I don't know. I'll be curious.
I think they added that dynamic, which is helpful for them. It's like they have flexibility now, the Bills, that is.
Yes.
Because that was not something they were doing early in the season. Then they started being hit with the same thing that the Chiefs were hit with, and they responded, I think, a little bit more quickly and effectively than the Chiefs. But, I mean, it's a new year. We'll see. I try to wipe all that stuff from my memory because every team is a little bit different, but I don't know. The last thing I have in my mind of Josh Allen is him being quite possibly the best quarterback, or at least having the best quarterback performance up there with one of the best quarterback performances that I'd ever seen. The tough part for him was the guy on the other side was doing the same damn thing.
Josh Allen, super soldier. Let's see if he's back. There's no reason why he wouldn't be back. One more quick thing, though, about the Bills. I do think offensive line's a little bit of a question mark. You know, they bring in Roger Saffold. They've got a question mark, I believe, at right tackle. Ryan Bates, there's a little bit of change there. Aaron Donald is not the guy you want to debut new anything. I mean, you could say Saffold's upgrade or whatever. I'm just saying that is something to monitor. So,
yeah. I mean, I would like to see Aaron Donald trying to tackle Josh Allen I said trying, which suggests that he can't. I'm not saying he can. I'm sure he can. I just would like to see those two going at it.
Josh Allen complained about this. There was it's an amazing quote. It was from last week. He was saying, I don't understand. I'm paraphrasing here, people. I'm bigger than him, but somehow he like climbs up on me and pulls me down. You know how Aaron Donald does that thing where he kind of like jumps like a backpack on quarterbacks?
Yep. Yeah. I remember like, him doing that to Alex Smith after his injury and thinking, oh no, God. Poor Alex's leg.
Well, no poor Josh Allen. If there's one quarterback in the NFL who it's a fair fight, it's that dude. All right, let's wrap here. You leaning Bills? It sounds like you're leaning Bills.
Yeah, I'm leaning Bills. I want to see Aaron Donald like throw around offensive linemen like he always does. But I think the Bills win.
I do too. However, I think cornerback is going to be an issue. So I don't think it's going to be a blowout or a low scoring game. Only for you. Whenever you try to break, whether it's high scoring or low scoring, the opposite always happens. So apologies for ruining the opener. But I'm not sorry that I had Dominique on this week and every week that he's available. Dominique, thank you so much, bud. And for those who are, by the way, haven't already subscribed to Dominique's show, he has a new podcast out. It's just called The Dominique Foxworth Show, right?
Correct.
The Dominique Foxworth Show.
They reject it because...
What was the name you wanted?
The Mother Foxworth Show.
I could see why they rejected that.
No, it was just zero fox given.
Do you remember the Zero Fox Given? That's really good.
Right?
Do you remember the name I came up with for the morning roast, our old radio show that was rejected?
No, what was it?
Because it was you, me, and Clinton Yates, color commentary. It's a great name.
That's an outstanding name. I don't remember that one. I remember a bunch of bad ideas from Clinton, though.
All right, well, tune in. Dominique's gonna be, it's coming out twice a week. Obviously it's gonna be probably smarter than this show, so you should listen to that show when you're ready to dial in. Listen to this show when you're ready to dial out.
You know, I don't mess with false humility. Your show is much smarter than mine. I hope it is, at least, because I plan on having fun. Smart is not fun.
All right, bud, I'll see you next week. Bye.